We can't get married, Christopher. We don't even know each other as adults.
Well, let's get married and get to know each other as adults.
Well, that's very Fiddler on the Roof of you.
Wonder of wonders, miracle of miracles, it's time to podcast again. If I were a podcast, what kind of podcast would I be? Podcasting now, Gilmore Girls. What, talking about movies that we're watching? Hey, Courtney.
Hey.
Will you podcast with me?
Will I? What?
Podcast with me.
Podcast with you.
Oh, hello and welcome back to the Ultimate Gilmore Girls Movie Night Podcast. I am Philip.
I'm Courtney.
And it's been a long time since I've been able to open with a song, so I wanted to do a medley.
It was great.
Tradition! Because that is a tradition of this podcast to open the songs.
Cool.
So, we're talking about a movie called Fiddler on the Roof today.
Yes, we are.
First of all, how are you doing?
Hot.
It is really hot. It's like
so hot.
Going to like 103, 104, 105 degrees.
Today was 106.
Yeah. It's hot.
And neither of us has air conditioning in our cars.
Nope. But we're making it.
Are we?
I'm alive still.
I had points in the car today when I was driving that I thought I might die of heat stroke and cause many accidents.
Did you?
No, but I felt like it. Listen, I was thinking though, when I was driving, I was thinking of when I was pregnant with Adele. I don't know why only Adele, but when I was pregnant with Adele, if I got really hot or if I like exerted myself too much, my eyes would get dark. Like it would be like tunnel vision where it'd be all black around and then I could just see through the small hole. And I never told a doctor about it because like I was pregnant. So weird things happen. And I thought, man, if I were pregnant right now and having that problem, this would be a big issue.
You have issues.
But I'm not, so it's okay.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So, anything else?
I would like to dedicate this podcast in memory of John Kett, who was the father of one of our loyal listeners and also my best friend, Jackie. She lost her dad earlier this week. And I knew Mr. Kett for a very, very long time.
Because
I've known their family for about 30 years. So so sad. And he was a really great guy. And we will dedicate the podcast in his memory.
Okay. Sounds good.
That's what I've decided.
That sounds good. Dedicated to John Kett.
John Kett. But I can't call him John.
Dedicated to Mr. Kett.
Mr. Kett. Is that, that's not a Oklahoma thing. You guys didn't
not
do that.
Usually.
You didn't do like first names. Or Mr. or Mrs.
No,
and then
I never did. Like my parents' friends were rarely ever Mr. and Mrs. It was just first names.
Really? Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. Never.
Which seems weird because I live in Oklahoma, which is thought of, you would think that that would be more Mr. and Mrs. than, like, Pennsylvania.
No, but what you guys do here is, like, Mr. or Mrs. and then their first name.
That's true. I never did that, though.
I didn't like, until we had friends from Louisiana, and then, like, they would get mad at us when we called them by their last names, mm-hmm. and so we had to call them, like, Mr. Jeff and Miss Edie instead of Mr. and Mrs. their last name. But never. I never called any of my friends' parents by their first names. Never. Or my parents' friends. Never. Mm. There's no way. None of our neighbors. No. It was always Mr. or Mrs. and then their last name.
That's funny. I don't... My friends' parents, I don't think I ever called them anything. Like, I don't think I called Mr. or Mrs. and I don't think I also called their first name.
To be fair, my parents...
Like, we never talked... Like, when we talked about them, we'd say, hey, your mom, your dad. And whenever I saw them, I said, hi. I wouldn't say, hi, Mr. This, hi, Mrs. This, or hi, first name.
My parents... Your parents were a lot more social than mine were. My parents, like, had neighbors that we spoke to because they were our neighbors. But they didn't have, like, friends that they hung out with.
Like, when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking more of, like, my parents' friends.
Yeah, my parents didn't really have that.
That we were family friends because of that.
Now that I say that, my mom had a friend... My mom notoriously was not great at keeping friends, but she had one friend that she had since like high school, but we called her Karen. We didn't call her by her last name. And then my dad had a best friend from when he was like in middle school and we called him Ed. We didn't call him by his last name. So maybe if they'd had more friends.
So that's really where you're going. Really,
that's, I think that's how our kids are going to describe me, those. I often really have friends because I don't. But
even though it's interesting because now, when we talk about our friends to our kids, we call them uncle this or aunt this.
Only if they're really close. Like, I call my roommates aunt whoever. Or, like, I call Jackie aunt whoever. But, like, a friend that I've met in adulthood, I probably wouldn't do that with. It would only be somebody that, like, I consider family.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Because friends I met in adulthood.
Yeah. Like, the friends we've met, like, at church and stuff, we do.
That's true. That's true. I've met a lot of friends I've been friends with for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I did that.
But they're going to be I didn't. They're going to be very confused. We've had to explain. They're not actually technically aunts or uncles.
It's confusing enough for our kids that our families are as intertwined as they are because our sisters don't call each other. So they have a hard time understanding why their cousins aren't related to each other. And it's
definitely. Okay. Since we didn't give any time last week or barely any time last time, Vanderpump, is anything going on?
Not really. Unfortunately. Okay. They're still filming. And little pieces of things are coming out, and I don't know. There's really nothing super exciting going on. I'm excited to see Ariana on Dance with the Stars. I think that's going to be fun.
She's still the only person we know.
Yes. And Tom Sandoval is on, I talked about this last week, is it called, like, Fox Special Forces or something? Yeah. It's like a military boot camp reality show.
Yeah.
And I recently learned that JoJo Siwa is always also on that show.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, there's really not a ton.
Are they filming right now?
They are filming.
They just don't have any background.
I mean, we're getting little pieces of things here and there. The biggest scandal lately was Raquel's dog, which I think I talked about in the last podcast.
Yeah, you did.
There hasn't really been much. I mean, there's just a lot of talk about, like, this person refuses to film with this person. Hmm. So we'll see. And the big mystery is Raquel actually going to come back or not?
Okay.
I don't think she should.
I would.
For her own mental health.
I think it's dumb.
Like, I think it would probably be great for the show if she came back. Mm-hmm. But I think that if that would, like, destroy her. I think she needs to just take the, what is it, in the sports terms, take the L. And just go live her life.
People don't say take the L.
What do you say?
I don't know.
Take the loss?
That's really not a sports analogy. Like, that's used more in, like, just everyday life. Like, take the L.
Well, in everyday life, she needs to take you.
I thought you were going to say take a sabbatical.
She should, probably should.
That's more religious.
But no, there's not a ton going on in Vanderpump Rules. But the new iteration of The Real Housewives of New York is actually really good. We won't talk about it because there's
I don't care about that at all.
No, I had no desire to watch it because this is the first time in, like, any of the Housewives franchises that they've just completely cleared the slate and started with, like, an entirely new cast. There is no connection between the old cast of Roni and the new cast.
Roni?
That's what they call it.
Okay. That sounds so dumb. Go on.
That's one of the only ones that you can do that with.
Well, good for it.
So you can't. Yeah, anyway. So, I wasn't going to watch it, but then I heard a lot of really good things from people that I really trust, and I decided to watch it. And it's the first lesbian housewife.
Wow, that's cool.
Which I like. I'm sad that it took this long
to
find a lesbian in New York, but yeah, that's what's up.
Awesome.
What have you been up to?
Nothing. Football season starts this in a month.
You also went to the beach for a week.
I did go to the beach, but football's about to start, so that's on my mind. Yeah, I went to Galveston with the kiddos and other members of my family. We had a good time. But football season starts.
Yeah. And we have two dogs now.
And we do have to, we've talked about that.
We did?
Oh, yeah. We talked about that two weeks ago.
Was Trixie here 2 weeks
ago? Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Football season starts.
I don't remember.
That's all I care about.
Trixie in the house.
I think we did. Maybe we talked about us getting...
No, because she came on a Friday. We probably recorded before.
No, that was when we recorded, like, Friday night, and I spent Saturday doing it. There was a time when I spent Saturday, because we recorded, like, a late Friday night.
Oh. Okay, so maybe she'll
see. And it was super
cool. Well, she's still here.
Yeah. But football season starts. That's what I care about.
I just want it to be colder. So, like, I'm kind of excited about football season in the sense that I know that it's going to start cooling off, because I cannot take this 106 degree weather. Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, let's talk about Fiddler on the Roof, Where was this mentioned in Gilmore Girls?
So this was first mentioned in season 1, episode 15, when Christopher proposes to Lorelai kind of out of nowhere. He says, let's get married and get to know each other as adults. And she says, well, that's very Fiddler on the Roof view. Then season 3, episode 1, Lorelai says, so what do we call this guy? Alumnus Darren? You know, like you'd say Farmer John or the Butcher Lazar Wolf. And in season 6, episode 1, Taylor says, well, what do you know? I thought there was a better chance of all four of the Beatles getting back together than you two ever coming down enough to get engaged. And Lorelai saying, oh, well, wonder of wonder, miracle of miracles. But there is no mention of the greatest reference of Fiddler. Yes!
In Tivia?
What did I say?
Why is that not mentioned? Like, that's a big part of that episode, isn't it?
I don't know. But I need to see where it is so that I can reference it. Okay, it's season 5, episode 15, called Jews and Chinese Food, and it's just Fiddler the whole time. And Kirk is...
Tevye,
and it's amazing.
Why is that not mentioned?
I don't know.
It's interesting.
I don't want to poke holes in our system, because I know that there are problems with it, and I don't...
care.
I don't want to know about it. There are some things that I know are bad that I choose to ignore. As soon as you start pulling out the red,
our whole podcast falls apart.
I can't.
What is your history with Fiddler?
Definitely seen it. My middle school did it because I auditioned for it. I did not get in, but I did audition for it. So I remember seeing it in middle school because my friends were in it. And then I don't know. I don't know when I actually saw the movie. I don't know that I saw the movie until like adulthood. I think I watched it with my friend Janine in Louisiana. She loves it. And I've seen it with you many times.
Have we?
I feel like I've watched it with you at least three times.
I don't remember watching it with you.
We watched it once at that Bed and Breakfast on our anniversary.
Yeah, we did. But I don't remember watching it more than once with you. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I first saw it probably in middle school, I think. I first saw the movie. My parents, I think it was one of those movies I was not in. I didn't realize that I liked musicals until like freshman year of high school.
That's fair.
Or sometime in high school, so like whenever they wanted me to watch this, I wasn't sure about it, and I loved it. I've seen the movie a lot of times. I performed in a community theater production when I was like 10 years. What year is this? 2023? Nope, like 14 years ago or so. And yeah, it was a while ago. I was the rabbi's son. We only have one rabbi. He only has one son. Why wouldn't I want the best? One thing about it is it's interesting because for those who don't know me, I love to perform, but I am the worst person when it comes to accents.
That's true.
So I had a CD. I had a CD that was like a Yiddish accent. Like how to do a Yiddish accent.
Did you really?
Yes. You like everybody who was in the cast got it. So I tried. It wasn't just like me. It was like
everyone. I thought you like did it on your own
time. Oh, no. Everyone on the cast got it. So I tried. I was never told don't do that or do it differently. But I probably, the rabbi's son has like 5 or 6, 7, 8 lines. I don't know how many lines I had. I think every line I did a different accent. I think I did.
See, whatever. I feel like at that point, though, like just do your own voice.
I mean, I had a song because I didn't have a whole song. The movie has 2 songs that it does not, that is in the theatrical production that's not in the movie. Mm-hmm. The Rumor is one of them, which starts, or at one point, the rabbi's son is singing. So I had like a 2 or 3 lines where I sang a song. And then there's another song that's, I think it's called Now I Have Everything, which is Perchik and Hava singing a duet. And it's gorgeous, and I'm upset that it is not in the actual movie. It should be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not Hava. Hoddle. Hoddle is the middle child. So Hoddle and Perchik sing a duet.
Oh, okay.
Hava is the
youngest.
The third oldest. Whatever. The youngest of the main.
Yeah, the youngest of the three main girls.
But I love Fiddler. And I'll probably talk about different aspects of, or when we did this production, as we talk about it. So we start with Tevye, who is singing about all the traditions that, well, not Tevye, but it's the whole, like...
the whole cast.
Yeah, the whole cast. Everybody is singing about the different traditions that they have. The father sing, the mothers, the sons and daughters. And I was the oldest. Whenever I did the prediction, I was the oldest because I was the rabbi's son. So I was the oldest out of the sons that did it. Mm. I was probably older than a lot of the fathers who sang their part. I was the only one with a full beard.
That was so long ago.
It was.
And you still were the oldest.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't know if I was. I wasn't one of the oldest, but I was definitely not. I was definitely older than two or three or four of the fathers who were younger than me because they were still in college and so forth. I was a couple years out of college. So, we learn about the different traditions that they have in the Jewish faith, what everybody does. And then Yenta, after that song is all done, she's the village matchmaker. She arrives with news for Golda, which brings us to the 45th most popular segment this year. In podcast history, it's like 502 now. But this year, we're 45th. Okay.
5 degrees, 5 degrees or less of jinkly.
Norma Crane, who plays Golda, is in a movie called Penelope with Jonathan Winters, who is in It's a Mad, Mad World with Phil Silvers, who is in Covergirl and Summerstock with Gene Kelly. Hmm. Have you ever seen It's a Mad, Mad World?
I don't think so.
I've wanted to see it. It's. Have you ever seen Rat Race?
No.
Okay, it's a lot like Rat Race, which means nothing to you.
No.
But that's also a really good movie. They're basically the same premise. And it has a lot of well-known comedians and actors in it.
Hmm.
But anyways, that is it. Norma Crane to Gene Kelly. Laser Wolf, the wealthy butcher, wants to wed Saito, their eldest daughter. Tevye must be persuaded to meet Laser to arrange the marriage. The two middle daughters, Huddle and Chava, I don't know because I want to speculate excitedly about what their mother and the matchmaker are talking about. Saito warns them not to be so hasty. They're poor, so their parents will have no choice but to take whatever husband Yenta brings. And that's when they sing matchmaker. I did not do that in my medley.
That's okay.
I don't want to try now. Right. But matchmaker, where they sing about what type of match it may be. I love that song. Saito is not eager to have a match time for her, as she is already in love with the tailor, Mutl Kumzul. Her friend since childhood.
Who I kept referring to as the poor guy.
Yes.
Because I kept thinking he was the rabbi's son anyway.
He is not the rabbi's son. He's not me.
Yeah.
Muddle was played by my friend Kyle for our Fiddler on the Roof.
He would be very good in that role.
What?
He would have been very
good. Yeah, he was.
I mean, I didn't see it.
Tevye's horse is lame and he must pull the milk cart himself. And then we go to him. He asks God who it would hurt if he were a rich man. The men of the village confront Tevye as he's late delivering their milk and cheese. I had a line here where I say, like, Rabbi, my cheese. I think he did give me the cheese at the end of it, so we're good. And then they talk about, then there's news from the outside, talking about expulsions. A student from Kiev, Perchik, newly arrived in town, hears that conversation and scolds them for doing nothing more than talk. The men dismiss Perchik as a radical, but Tevye takes a liking to him and invites him home for the Sabbath meal, offering him room and board in exchange for tutoring his two youngest daughters. Golda tells Tevye to meet Laser Wolf after the Sabbath, but does not tell him why, knowing that Tevye does not like Laser. Saito is afraid that Yenta will find her husband before Mutl asks Tevye for her hand, but Mutl resists. He is shy and afraid of Tevye's temper, and Jewish tradition says the matchmaker arranges marriages. Mutl is also very poor and is saving up to buy a sewing machine before he approaches Tevye to show that he can support a wife. The family gathers around for the Sabbath prayer, and that is when they sing the song, the Sabbath prayer. Or I don't.
What's it called?
I don't remember.
Is it just the Sabbath song?
I think so. The Sabbath prayer. In our production, I ate with the rabbi and the beggar. We invited the beggar home.
That's so nice.
That was awful. Who was played by my friend Alex? The rabbi was played by a different person each week. We had three rabbis.
That's right, because you have all these guys that you would talk to and say, he's my dad.
He's my dad. Okay. Yes. Yes. And two of them are, you know, Methodist pastors. They're not really Jewish.
Nice.
And then the other one was Paul.
Yes.
Old Paul.
I feel like we've run into him a lot.
I think you've met him before.
I've met him many times.
Have you really?
I feel like we run into him.
Maybe we were in another.
Or at least we did know what was
going on. Maybe we went to a meeting. Maybe we went to other shows.
See? I'm sure, yeah.
After the Sabbath, Tevye visits Laser Wolf, where they're talking about marriage to Saito. And there's a humorous part where Tevye is like, thinks that it's about the cow, but it is not. And that's when they sing To Life. I also didn't do that song at the beginning of this.
It's okay. Gosh. You didn't have to do every song.
I missed so many, and now I'm sad. To Life, L'chaim. Which is my favorite song in the whole thing, probably. It was my favorite one as we performed, definitely. Especially because as you act more drunk, it's kind of more fun to perform. Terribly sorry, our dog has been making quite a bit of noise. The dog we've taken in is making quite a bit of noise, not being a very good tenant for us being landlords. Or I'm just being too loud. That might be it. So, To Life. Outside the inn, after the singing of To Life, Tevye bumps into the Russian constable, who has jurisdiction over the Jews in the town. And that's when the constable warns him that there's going to be a demonstration in the coming weeks.
Okay, but here's my question, and this is where I'm going to sound real dumb. This is going to make me sound so ignorant, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Don't ask me any questions, because I'm not prepared to sound ignorant today.
I feel ignorant because I didn't realize that there were government agencies that were controlling Jewish populations that long ago. Mm-hmm. I feel like all of us know about World War II. All of us know about Nazis, but this is before that.
Yeah, it was at the
early
1900s.
I guess I'm not going to say anything ignorant now. I'm just going to say that I feel ignorant because I did not realize that was a thing so much before. Mm-hmm. Which, being persecuted forever.
I feel like, I was going to say, they've been persecuted forever, Jewish people have.
Forever, not just exaggerating forever. Yeah.
I feel like just World War II is when it gets all of the publicity as far as anti-Semitism.
But I think also that's why when people ask things like, how could the Holocaust have happened? Like, this is how it happened, because this was happening for years, and people today still don't know. Like, mm-hmm. It's not still at the forefront of our minds, probably. More at the forefront of people who are smarter than these minds, but
yeah,
it's not something we knew about, and it's probably not something Americans.
But the thing is that it still could happen today.
It still does happen today.
I know. I mean, because like if we take just American politics right now,
I know.
I'm very certain that if there was another Holocaust, like just in the U.S., and Trump was behind it, the majority of his supporters would follow him and do whatever he said.
That's what's so scary to me about his followers, is blind loyalty. Mm-hmm. When, like,
yeah, at the beginning he said they could shoot somebody and they'd still
vote for him,
and he was 100% correct.
I mean, he's been indicted 3 times and he's still the front runner.
Yeah. So I mean, that is how it could happen.
That I've never questioned how the Holocaust could have happened. I think that it's just a slow progression of allowing things and allowing things and allowing things, and people being angry because things aren't the way they want them to be. And like, science shows us how radicalism happens, but I didn't realize that this was happening so much earlier than what we saw.
And in this one, the constable has sympathy for the Jewish community and for Tevye, but he has loyalty to the Tsar.
That is why
this is happening.
Like, this is what hurts me, is when you see people, and like, I'm sure we saw this in Schindler's List, where like, you see people who are like, I like Jews, I like you, I think you're a great person, but I have to do this horrible thing to you. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. It gives the same vibe as like, I have gay friends, but like, I'm going to vote against gay marriage. Like, it just, I don't understand that part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
I think when I was younger, I always thought, like, if people who were racist just, like, made a friend who was black, they'd be okay. They would stop being racist. And, like, it's not true. And that's so sad to me. Now that I've, like, learned that as an adult, like, no. They just think, like, that one person happens to be nice, but on the whole, everybody's.
Yeah.
I hate storylines like that, because my brain cannot compute that.
The next morning, Tevye delivers the news to his family that he's agreed that Seitel will marry Lejwolf. Gold is overjoyed. Seitel is horrified and pleads no, 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 because she wants Motel is there and she wants to marry Motel.
Those daughters are all very good at pleading their father. Mm-hmm. All three of them had moments in the movie where I was like, Yep, I would give in to that.
And then we get to Tevye's monologue, and he has a monologue each time. He might have to break tradition because of who his daughters want to marry.
Yeah.
And I like that because I like the back and forth, the him really having trouble. Yeah, being feeling torn. And even with the third daughter, when he basically says no, he's still, you can tell that it's still eats at him, and he's like, oh, what should I do? It's not just a definitive, this is what I'm going to decide. And then he says yes, and that's when Motul sings Miracle of Miracles.
I think, though, like, him being torn between tradition and, like, the reality in front of him, I think that it happening so many times prior to his youngest daughter, not youngest, but the youngest of three, I think that's what caught, like, if she had run away, which we'll get to, but if she had run away with this non-Jewish guy before everything happened with Seitel and the middle daughter, his name I can't remember, maybe he would have come to terms with it.
Well, I fully disagree.
Really?
I think Chava marrying a non-Jewish person was just too far. That is one bridge too far.
In the moment when he's having that monologue, which again, we haven't gotten to yet, but I feel like he gets close to breaking tradition with Chava, the same as he does with the other girls. It's like he can kind of.
I think he might have come close, but I think what it comes down to is that is one tradition he had to keep. Yeah. He said, I don't have to choose who you marry, or the matchmaker doesn't. You can marry who you want. Okay, you can marry this person, but. At least they're Jewish. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's one of the strands that allowed him to allow that to happen, was at least they're Jewish.
That makes me sad, too, because I can see his side of it, only because when you see how much the Jews are persecuted and have been persecuted for so many years, I can understand. It's the same with, like, when you see, I feel like I'm going to sound like someone could probably splice all the things I'm saying in this podcast and I could sound racist, but... I see the same thing when I see people of certain ethnicities wanting them to be with the same people of the same ethnicity because of the years of prejudice and racism and genocide in some cases.
Yeah.
I can see that. I can see being like, no, those people hate us. Why would you go to somebody who hates us?
Yeah.
So I can understand it, but she was in love and he didn't hate them.
That's true. So that night in bed with Golda, Tevye has an inspiration. He tells Golda that he has had a nightmare. She offers to interpret his dream, and Tevye describes it. Golda's grandmother, Seitel, for whom their daughter is named, returned from the grave to bless the marriage of her namesake, but to Motul, not to Laserwolf. Laser's formidable wife, Fru Masera, also rises from the grave to warn in graphic terms of severe retribution if Seitel marries Laser.
It's kind of scary.
Tevye's superstitious wife is terrified, and she quickly agrees that Seitel must marry Motul, much to Tevye's secret relief.
Okay, the dream is scary.
Love the dream.
Yes, I like.
That was probably in our production. That was one of my favorite scenes.
That's the only scene you showed me on the DVD of your production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot.
But I want him to get in trouble for it. He manipulated his wife by lying.
But it's brilliant. It is so in depth.
It is good very job. In depth.
Good job, Tevye. I cannot be mad at Tevye.
I'm not mad at him. I just feel like he needs to get found out. You know, just get to lie and manipulate your wife and, like, go on living life normally.
Yeah.
I know it's a small manipulation and his daughter's happy, but he lied to his wife. There needed to be an end point to that story.
I disagree. I think it's perfect as is. Disagree.
Don't lie to your wife.
I won't, except for an important dream.
You don't dream. If you told me you had a dream, I would be like,
that's a lie.
That's 100% a lie, because you don't dream.
On the road outside of town, Tevye's middle daughter, Chava, is teased and intimidated by some Russian youths, but one of them, Fyedka, protects her, dismissing the others. He offers Chava the loan of a book, and a secret relationship begins. Then we're at the wedding day of Seitel and Motul, and that's when the song Sunrise Sunset, which I love that song, and that is one that the lyricist, and whenever LGBT plus gay marriage was legalized, the lyricist wrote words or fixed it so it could be used at a lesbian wedding or a gay wedding. I mean, there were only a couple of lines. I don't remember what they were, but I thought that was cool how he did that. And then they do the wedding dance. Laser gives a final gift, but an argument arises with Tevye over the broken agreement. Perchik ends the tiff by breaking another tradition. He crosses the barrier between the men and women to dance with Tevye's daughter, Huddle. And this is when my famous line in my production, where I yell, "She's dancing with a man."
Yep.
Yeah.
I've heard that from you many times.
It's a good line. Okay. And I got louder and more obnoxious with it each time we did it.
That is a very fun scene to watch, though.
Yeah. And then the celebration ends abruptly when a group of Russians rides into the village to perform the demonstration. They disrupt the party, damaging all the gifts and wounding Perchik, who attempts to fight back and wreaking more destruction in the village. And Tevye advises everyone to clean up the mess.
And they destroyed the pillows.
You were very upset about that.
That Tevye and his wife gave to Seitel and Motel.
Yeah.
They gave them goose down pillows and a mattress. And these Russians, effing Russians, destroyed their pillows, and it makes me really mad.
This was when, in our production, in one of the productions we did, in one of our performances, we decided, it might have been our last one, we decided all the guys that were in the production just did like a tag your itch type thing, and we were wanting to see who was the last person that was it. So what it would be is like, I would squeeze somebody's hand or squeeze somebody's... Or you would squeeze somebody's arm or something and they'd be it. And we did it throughout the production.
People like you would drive me nuts if I was in a production with you.
That's why it was only the guys.
I get so nervous about anything on stage that I have to be like, even when I was like just in the chorus, like I have to be in my head realizing what's happening in front of me. Or else I'm just going to totally lose it and freeze on
That's
stage.
Why.
So if you guys were like playing a game. Well, I was trying to do that. I would be so mad.
But we didn't do it to any of those. We only did it to, like, the guys. Like,
well, probably were girls who would have liked it. I just
But we didn't want to make anybody upset. So we just did it. And I messed it up by ending the game at the end of the first act. Because I had gotten it probably to life in one of the scenes. Maybe in the wedding scene. At the very end of the first act, when Perchik gets injured, I go to Perchik and I think the rabbi and I help him up and we walk off. And it was my good friend Andrew was Perchik in this production. And I tagged him and said, "You're it." Which was a dumb thing for me to do. Because in the production of Fiddler, Perchik...
That's the last time you see Perchik.
No. Oh. Perchik is in some of it, the rest of it. He's only with Huddle. And we didn't have any of the women be a part of it.
He's not with any of the men.
No, he's only with Huddle. He's not with any men at all. So I ended it at the end of the first act. So when we got off stage, Andrew said, "Philly, what did you do?" It's over.
And you can only do it when you're on stage. You couldn't.
Yeah, you only can do it on stage. That's the fun of it.
You did.
I know. I should have said, "I take it back." But I always think about that if I watch the movie at the end of the first act. Months later, Perchik tells Huddle he must return to Kiev to work for the revolution. He proposes marriage, admitting that he loves her, and says that he will send for her. She agrees. And this is when, in the musical, they sing a song called "Now I Have Everything."
Oh, yeah.
It's "Now I Have Everything." And it's talking about, like, how you thought you had stuff, but now I have everything because I have you. Mm. And it's a gorgeous song.
Listen, audience. Being in love does not mean you have everything you need. You need a lot more in life than just one person.
Okay, it's a good song.
Don't lose yourself in one person.
It's still a good song.
Okay, it's just I don't want our children to learn that love fixes everything.
They tell Tevye, and so I guess Perchik is in a scene with Tevye, but our Tevye Randall, who I'm also friends with, was not a part of this game. So that wouldn't have worked either. I know. So they tell Tevye that they're engaged. He's appalled that they're flouting tradition by making their own match, especially as Perchik is leaving. When he forbids the marriage, Perchik and Huddle inform him that they do not seek his permission, only his blessing. And then Tevye finally relents. And this is kind of the same one as the first one, because it's just making your own match, except I guess the difference is that he's leaving.
Yeah, she's going to have to leave.
To be a revolutionary, yeah. Basically. So it's a little bit different, but like as far as tradition goes, it's similar as...
It's similar because Seidel. He wouldn't have picked Model because he was poor, and he wouldn't have picked Herchik because he was radical.
Yeah.
So, like, it's similar. It's just a bad match, basically.
So Tev explains these events. Love, he says, it's the new style. Then Tev asks Golda, do you love me? And I love the scene because it's... I feel like it's the first time that they've really thought about... We were matched. Just the matchmaker put us together.
Yeah.
Do we love each other? It was like the first time they really thought, wait, do you love me? As opposed to just we've been married. So.
That's what I like hearing about. I feel like Indian couples, not our generation, but generation one or two above us, still have matched marriages. Mm-hmm. And it like amazes me because you see these couples working together in a functional relationship. But they didn't marry for love. But, like, they probably do love each other at that point.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
It just amazes me. Because, like, it seems so, like, so luck of the draw. But, like, is it any more luck of the draw of just, like, meeting someone? Because you and I got married real fast.
Yeah. Oh. So then I find out that Perchik has been arrested during a demonstration in Kiev. And around this time is when they also did a song in the theatrical production called The Rumor. Which I got to sing a couple lines. Mm-hmm. I sang about Perchik and I think, remember Perchik? And it was a fast song.
That's fun.
And I think I have some of the first lines. I yelled, Rabbi, Rabbi! And sang to him.
Why did you call your dad Rabbi?
What?
Why did you call your dad Rabbi?
Because that's what you call him.
But like your son.
I know. Dad. I called him, it was in the script.
Right, but it's like your dad's a doctor. You're not like, doctor.
You weren't alive in the early 1900s like I was in this production of Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, jeez.
That's what we did.
Yes, I was alive in the late 1900s.
Yes. So Perchik's been arrested, and Huddle is determined to join him there. At the railway station, she explains to her father that her home is with her beloved, wherever he may be, yet she will always love her family, far from the home I love. Huddle then leaves on the train while Tevye watches her leave. What?
I like that song.
So do I.
But, like, they probably never see each other again.
Yeah.
That's sad.
I like to think they do.
I think that they'll see Haba.
Yeah.
Because, like, they tell her where they're going.
Yeah.
But, what is her name? Mob?
That's true.
Model? No, it's not Model.
No, that's who Seidel marries. Huddle. H-O-D-E-L.
Huddle doesn't even know that they get kicked out of Antepka.
Yeah, that's true.
So they probably never see her again.
Possibly not.
Sorry.
So then,
bring it down.
No, I'm sad. So then we find out that there's a new arrival with Seidel and Model, and it's a sewing machine. But then later we also find out that they had a child.
Yeah. How much time passed?
I don't know. That child.
I was very confused in that scene because I was like, I feel like the time between when they had the demonstration at the wedding and when they kicked them out of Antepka. Can't be that long that there's like a one-year-old child.
It wasn't a newborn.
Definitely not.
Weeks pass and Hava finally gathers the courage to ask Tevye to allow her marriage to Fiatka, a young Christian. Again, Tevye reaches deep into his soul, but marriage outside the Jewish faith is a line that he cannot cross. He forbids Hava ever to speak to Fiatka again. When Golda brings the news that Hava's eloped with Fiatka and they got married in a Russian Orthodox church, Tevye wonders where he went wrong.
I like the dance he does
after. And that's the song. Little bird, little Havala.
Yes, but then she comes to him.
Do, 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 do. Yeah.
And he dances at her.
Yes.
Like he has his monologue in his head, but then he decides he can't.
Hava returns and tries to reason with him. Literally
dances at her.
But he refuses to speak to her and tells the rest of the family to consider her dead. Yeah, so he cannot accept that. It is really sad.
That was a hard moment for people who liked Tevye.
Meanwhile, rumors are spreading of the Russians forcing Jewish villagers to leave their villages. And they sing Anna Tevka when they're like, let's leave.
I know.
That's why they always wear their hats.
I know. I always sing the Anna Tevka part of the song, so that's it. I don't know either. But that was when I was watching, and I had a moment where I realized how much I love the Jewish faith. I love the Jewish faith.
Mm-hmm.
I remember learning about it in like world religions in college, and being like, "Oh my gosh, I'm so on board with this. I'm so on board with Judaism." But also, like, I just love the culture of it because I think you see obviously this is Zorka fiction, but I think in general, in history, we've seen Jewish communities are very good at looking for the bright side in the worst situations. Mm-hmm. And that's 100% what they did in this song. Like, Antioch is not so great. It's fine. Like, we don't need to be here. It's cool. I don't even know why we've been here this long. Like, I just love that.
Yeah. Tevye, his family and friends begin packing up to leave. Ian, to the matchmaker, plans to immigrate to Jerusalem and says goodbye to Golda. And that Laser plans to immigrate to Chicago to live with his former brother-in-law, whom he detests, but a relative is a relative. Laser and Tevye share one last embrace before departing. I like that. I like that the way they depart, because it's like they had so much tension. We really haven't seen them together since the wedding. And that's when they had so much tension. So it's nice to see them have this good talk. Hav and her husband Fiatka come to Tevye's house one last time and tell the family that they are leaving. Tevye shows signs of forgiving Hava by murmuring under his breath, "And God be with you," silently urging Seidel to repeat his words to Hava. Modal and Seidel and their child go to Poland. The constable and the Russian soldier silently watch as a mass evacuation of Anatevka takes place.
But, like, what did they do with the land?
I have no idea.
Did they just move Russians in? Move Christian Russians in?
I assume that's what they did.
It's crazy.
I assume so. In the final scene, Tevye, his wife Golda, and their two youngest daughters, Sprinza and Bielka, somberly walk down the desolate, snowy road with Tevye pulling the cart with all their belongings in it. As Tevye stops for a short rest, he sees the fiddler behind them in the distance playing. Tevye motions to him to come along with him, symbolizing that even though he must leave his town, his Jewish traditions will always be with him.
Is the fiddler real? Or is it a hallucination?
I think it's real.
Have I been inside too long? Because I definitely saw it and was like, I know he's making that guy up. I think that guy's real.
I don't know. But that's Fiddler on the Roof. I like Fiddler on the Roof because it's, even though it is of the Jewish faith, it is about breaking traditions.
Yeah.
And even though this is what I've held for so long, is that as important as people, as my family? And I think the same, and as we're in 2023, and a lot of evangelical Christians are having discussions about LGBTQ+ people,
yes.
The LGBTQ+ community, a lot of them are holding on to these traditions that have been in Christianity for years and years, and all the dogma.
Well, and isn't that the saying in Christian churches, is this is the way it's always been done? That's like the motto of white Christians.
And while doing that, are spitting on people and treating people as less than because they hold on to this tradition.
Listen, I identify as a Christian, but I will say historically Christians are the worst.
They are. They are.
They're the worst.
They are. But it's and I keep thinking about some, as we go on, I feel like traditions that we've always held on to, dogma that we've always held on to, everything that we've always held on to is continuing to move forward. And we're continuing to maybe take what we've learned and interpret it in different ways as humans, while some people are holding on to what people believed centuries ago.
Yeah. You see it in LGBTQ+ families where, like, a parent finds out that their child is gay.
Mm-hmm.
And they always say there's, like, a grieving process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, healthy, have your feelings. But what they're grieving is the tradition.
Yeah.
They're grieving the tradition of them marrying someone of the opposite sex, them having children naturally.
2.5 children.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's silly because it makes you think, like, without all of those traditions and what you're being told your entire life is the way things are supposed to be, you wouldn't have all that grief. Mm-hmm. You would just think, like, cool, this is what we're doing now, and, like, that's fine. So tradition's great, but also...
Yeah, well...
It almost feels like a...
That's what I like, because both Courtney and I are United Methodists, and in United Methodists, we follow what is called the Wesleyan Quadrilateral, where you read scripture... based on tradition as a part of it, but also reason and experience.
Yeah.
And one more.
Tradition. I'll look it up so we can
read. Tradition. No, yeah. Tradition, reason, and experience. That's correct. Because scripture is the fourth one. They're all four together. But you read scripture by having your tradition, but also by using your reason and your conductive skills and knowing the Bible in context. A lot of people, it's taken out of context so many times. And your brains, which you don't take it verbatim because it's not meant to be taken verbatim.
Well, like, as an avid reader, you shouldn't read anything with blind faith or loyalty or anything. Like, I understand it's a holy scripture. It's different. But still written by men. You still have to look at it through the lens of this was written by another human being who has flaws, who didn't know certain things, hadn't experienced certain things. Like, you can't
read anything. Whenever you read it, I think if you just read it and take it as blind faith and not actually studying or take it in the context it was written, then you don't understand how to read and your teachers failed you. Because that's all a part of reading. And so that's where a lot of tradition, like Christian tradition, will never be more important than people.
Exactly.
And the people that have been conservative pastors who continue to condemn, there's blood on their hands.
Yeah.
Because the suicide rate in the LGBTQ plus community, or especially for young LGBTQ plus youth, is way higher than their straight peers or their heterosexual peers. So the condemnation that continues to come is killing people, and they don't realize that. And now we've got off on our own. I've pushed us off completely. I made those parallels.
I will add on to that. Having worked in inpatient psych for, you know, however long I did, 5-6 years, the population, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this. So the percent of the population in the outside world everywhere that are LGBTQ plus is much lower than the percentage of the population of an inpatient psych unit that is LGBTQ plus. That has always broken my heart. Like, to walk onto my unit and see people who, like, the only reason they're there is because who they truly are in their heart of hearts, who they know and have bound themselves to be, has caused them so much turmoil in their outside life because of the way people are reacting to them, that they need to be in an inpatient psych unit. Like, that's absurd. That's absurd. Yeah. That's not, there are, I mean, obviously there are a lot of people there that are because their brains are messed up. They're seeing things they shouldn't be seeing. They're hearing things they shouldn't be hearing. Their brain is telling them to kill themselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of the LGBTQ plus patients that I saw were there because of how other people had treated them and how they reacted to it, obviously, but still a lot of it was outside influence. Like, that sucks.
Definitely.
That's horrible.
Definitely. All right. This has a few tidbits of background information. This is this is the final film of Norma Crane, played Golda. She was suffering from breast cancer during production and died less than 2 years later after the movie.
I definitely thought you were going to say this was the final film of Norman Rockwell, and I don't know why.
I don't know. She told the only people that knew that she had breast cancer and that it was severe. Norman Jewison, who is the director, Topol, and the associate producer, Patrick Palmer, all of whom kept her secret.
I want her and Topol to have been friends.
They might have been. Director Norman Jewison was brought into the project by executives at United Artists who thought he was Jewish, because of his last name, Jewison. I would assume. His first words to the executives upon meeting them were, "You know I'm not Jewish, right?" Topol was only 35 years old when he performed the role of Tevye.
Okay, but why doesn't Topol have a last name?
He does. That is his last name. I believe his name is Chaim, Chaim Topol.
So it's like a stage name is just
Topol. Yes. And so, like, by this time, because he had been on the, he had been in theater, and I think by this time his stage name was just Topol.
I'll allow it.
All right. So he was only 35 years old. To make Topol look older, the makeup team clipped 15 white hairs from director Norman Jewison's beard and applied them to his eyebrows.
I'll allow it. They actually did a very good job, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Considering the time period that the movie was made, they did a very good job.
And I had no idea that he was until I saw it. I mean, I've known him for a while, but like just watching it, you can't tell that he's young.
He died just this past March.
Yeah. Every time Tobel talks on camera to God, he's talking to a white ball on the end of a stick held out of camera range.
That's fun.
Yeah. Zero Mostel originated the part of Tevye on Broadway. He really wanted the part of the movie. And I think they didn't want it because he was a big name and would steal parts from the movie and would like steal attention. Which I'm glad because if anybody asks me who is the actor that most personifies his role, I will always say Topol. I feel like he's the ultimate part of Tevye, that's him. Which is why he continued to perform as Tevye, I think, till his last time was in 2009. I think it was the last time he performed as Tevye.
Yeah, performing his role more than 3,500 times from 67 to 2009. That's absurd.
Yeah. Other possible Tevyes. I'm going to throw some names out there.
Okay.
Orson Welles was a possible Tevye. Anthony Quinn, Marlon Brando. And Marlon Brando had already been in a musical. He was in Guys and Dolls before this and was made fun of because of his singing.
Like bad rap for his singing.
Yeah. They were the actors who turned down the lead role, it says.
Yeah, because they knew they would
Two others that wanted the role were Frank Sinatra and Danny Kaye.
No, I'm out. It's just terrible. It's just terrible, guys.
Yeah. And actually, I think that might be it. I believe at one time, I thought there were more. He also did perform the role of Tevye, like in the 90s. And the role of Golda was the person who played Seitel in this movie.
That's weird. I'm sure it was fine for them, but it feels weird to
me. I mean, also, when he was in this, he was 35. She was probably 22 or something. I mean, like, she wasn't like a teenager in this.
But that is weird. How much older was Golda than him? The actress who played Golda?
10, I think. 10 or 11 years. 10 or 11, I think. I don't have
it. He did a great job. I mean.
Yeah. So.
I can't imagine anyone else.
What are your thoughts on Fifth Element?
I love this movie. I love the story.
What do you give it out of 10 cups of coffee?
9. Not perfect, but 11.
Okay. I will give it 9 as well. There are a couple movies that I'll give 10, and we're not there yet. But I will give this a 9.
I guess I should take a look at future movies to see what I would give a 10 to. Mm-hmm. So that I don't give a 10 to something that doesn't deserve
it. That's the hard part. Is I wonder,
I tend to rate high. Like, when you look back at books I've read this year, they're all, like, 3s and 4s, but there are definitely books I did not like that much that I rated 4 because I, like, felt bad.
But I like this movie. It's a good one.
It's good. I like this one.
Our next movie. Oh, who in the Gilmore Girls universe would like this?
I mean, Kirk, obviously, who had to draw inspiration from somewhere. That's all I got.
That's a good one. I feel like any of the Gilmore's
like this. Yeah, they would like it.
I feel like Kirk would like this. I feel like Suki would like this.
I could picture Suki like sitting on the couch being like, oh, I love this movie. Like, I should just picture it.
I would say, I believe that Melissa McCarthy would like this movie.
Probably.
She might, I don't know. So, our next movie is Gone with the Wind. Which I believe is like another 3-hour
It's so long.
Movie.
It's not even that I'm like dreading watching it. It's that I'm dreading spending the time watching.
Yeah, this was we took 3 days to watch this movie. Because it's 3 hours and we get tired easily. But it's weird because this movie I also don't feel like as long.
It doesn't feel long.
It's 3 hours, but it doesn't
watching it,
feel long.
But it was long.
Yeah. So be ready in a couple weeks when we watch Gone with the Wind. And everyone out there, frankly, my listeners, we don't give a damn. Bye.
Bye.